Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2 of For the Record program number 637, Catching Up with Daniel Hopsicker. This is being recorded on June 8th of the year 2008. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other, well, the author of Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, the second now out in paperback with two additional chapters, and the maven of madcowprod.com. Daniel, welcome back to our airwaves.
Pleasure to be with you, Dave.
Now, in the break, I take it you have access to LexisNexis, right?
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, I went to the Spitfire website and printed up the description for the Record 336. Now, unhappily, at this time, I was simply putting the annotated material. I wasn't actually excerpting text, which I do now. But you went in and you got a hold of the article itself. So,
Let me tell you what you got a hold of, Dave. Okay.
Okay.
We now have two sources confirming that German and Swiss associates of Mohammed Atta in Venice, German and Swiss pilots were close to Mohammed Atta in Venice. And the first, of course, is when Wolfgang Boringer, a man I've been writing about for several years, was the subject of an FBI terror alert in the South Pacific. And you, my friend, have come up with the second, God bless you, a story from the L.A. Times on November 15, 2001.
Okay, let me just real quickly. The suspicion hangs over hijacked suspect's ex-roommate by Carol J. Williams of the Los Angeles Times, 11-15-01. Page A4 is the page on which it appeared. Go ahead, Daniel.
Well, first of all, the first interesting thing is Carol is writing from Hamburg, okay? Not in Venice. She's in Hamburg. You want me to read you the article?
Yeah, let's hear it, because okay, the listeners would love to hear this. Go ahead.
Okay, and let me see. It's 1,300 words. But
you don't have to read the whole article, but just the important parts.
Okay,
well,
sure. You know, okay.
Let it rip. Let it rip.
Okay, here we go. Certainly the lead's important. When Thorsten, Thorsten, Berman, Bierman, arrived at the Florida Flight Training Center a year ago for a six-week course for an instrument license, he was pleased to be housed with three other German-speaking students in a school-owned apartment within walking distance of the airfield. That would be the Base Street, a place where Amanda Keller said Mohammed Atta and his friends did cocaine. One of his roommates, the story goes on, a congenial Lebanese, was even willing to cook most of the group's dinners and lend the others his red Mitsubishi, the only transportation the students had. But the Lebanese left a nightmare legacy when he turned in his key. He was Ziad Samir al-Jara, one of the suspected September 11th airplane hijackers. And the young German has been tainted by association, okay? Tainted by association, apparently. Carol is writing, and who knows, it could be true. Because Bierman hails from Hamburg, where Draw and at least two others identified by the FBI as hijackers live, his name turned up on an FBI watch list. His bank account was frozen. Police poured over his transactions. Journalists have showed up with cameras at his mother's house in their hunt for accomplices in the terror attacks. Look at that. This is the first time that I've heard that any other darn journalist in the whole world but me knew that Mohammed Atta had close German pilot associates. German police have nothing on him, the story goes on, but they have warned him he may still be branded an undesirable in U.S. immigration computer records. The shadow cast over Bierman's reputation, the story continues, has discouraged him from pursuing his lifelong desire to work for an airline, and he is left with a tedious job in a medical insurance office while he waits to see if distracted FBI agents will clear his name. Well, goddamn, 3,000 people died on September 11th, and Thorsten Berman was inconvenienced, and the L.A. Times is doing a story about it. Excuse me. Story goes on. It was a coincidence that both Girard and I were from Hamburg. Maybe that is what raised suspicion, said Berman, noting that none of the other Germans or Austrians who moved in and out of the apartment he shared with Girard had been placed on the FBI watch list. U.S. diplomats in Berlin have assured Berman by telephone that he is no longer considered a suspect, said him as he spoke to Mark Smith. But Smith said, after consulting with FBI agents, that U.S. authorities don't know if there is any provision for providing written assurance that he has a clean bill of health. On the embassy's advice, Bierman made a visa application Thursday to the U.S. consulate in Frankfurt to test whether any trace of the watch list taint remains in the immigration system. Even if he is granted the visa, Bierman worries that the stain could linger. He noted that his name was still on a watch list Finnish authorities published on the Internet a few days after U.S. officials told him he had been cleared. Bierman said he realized that police would want to talk to him as soon as he learned Girard was among the September 11 suspects. He contacted Hamburg police on September 17th after seeing TV pictures of his former Florida roommate. I realized I would be considered a witness and figured it was better to go to police myself than wait until I was summoned, he said. I thought I would probably be there about 30 minutes, but it took 6 hours. I was amazed and a little worried. Interrogators wanted to know about Girard's behavior, his activities, his contacts, and resources. The young German remembered some details, but said he had already forgotten many others. Bierman had never met Girard before both showed up at the flight school in October of 2000 and hadn't seen him since returning to Germany last December 13th. Bierman chose the Venice, Florida-based flight school for his instrument rating lessons because he had already earned a private pilot's license there in 1999. Both instruction and the hourly plane rentals are much cheaper in the United States than in Germany, Bierman explained, and we've certainly heard that before, that was me, making U.S. schools popular among those in the early stages of training. To rent a single-engine plane in Hamburg costs about $230 an hour, compared with about $100 at most U.S. airfields, he said. Bierman's first, well, let's stop there for just a second. I mean, that's the same explanation given by all of them. I mean, it's cheaper to fly in the U.S. Why did you go to Venice, Florida? It's cheaper to fly in the U.S. Well, there's 220 flight schools in Florida alone. Why did you go to Venice, Florida? Okay. Well, the name of that man is Pascal Schreier. Let me put that out there. Pascal Schreier, somebody wants to find out what happened September 11th. That's a good name to know. Back to the story. Bierman's first inkling of trouble came when an Austrian journalist called him in mid-October to ask if he had been part of the Hamburg terror cell. After being told at his branch of Hamburger Sparkasse that his account was frozen and police were reviewing his bank records, he went back to the local federal criminal office agents who had interrogated him to ask them to find out why he was on the FBI watch list. German police, now it gets interesting, German police referred him to the U.S. consulate here, where diplomats advised him to call the embassy in Berlin, where he was given phone numbers for the Federal Aviation Administration in Washington, which sent him to the FBI satellite office in Frankfurt. Bierman recalled that an agent who answered the phone in Frankfurt told him his troubles were of no concern to the FBI. He was unbelievably rude. He said outright that he didn't care if I was having trouble because of the list, Bierman said. I was quite surprised. I had the impression from my time in the United States that officials there are more polite and helpful than here in Germany. I still have that impression for the most part, but this FBI agent was unbelievably arrogant. After repeated appeals to U.S. embassy officials, he was assured 2 weeks ago that his name had been removed, but no one is willing to give him anything in writing. One U.S. official said it's unlikely Bierman would get anything because of the precedent that would set. He wants to earn a license, but not if he's blacklisted. He remembers being perplexed by Girard's reticence about why he was training to be a pilot. Another mystery was why Girard rented a separate small apartment for some of the time he lived with the others at the flight school unit. He had a separate apartment. He told us it didn't have any furniture, so he stayed with us. Sometimes he was sleeping on the couch, he said. The German said he disliked his roommate's controlling behavior on the flight and his refusal to tank up before they took a round trip together. And I'm just told by the associate of mine who discovered that DanielHopsicker.com is registered to Stefan Gerharen, that there is something on Thorsten Bierman, also in the New York Times, where he discusses his flight. And the name now does ring a tiny bell. But how interesting that we have this guy complaint. We have the LA Times reporting a story about a German student pilot complaining that an FBI agent was unbelievably arrogant to him when he phoned. Okay?
Well, not only that, but he was mentioning that there were other Germans and Austrians who were hanging out in the same crowd as his roommates.
Exactly. And that, of course, is confirmation for what Amanda Keller told me. And by the way, since we're speaking of that, there's a major writer coming out with a book next year from Random House on 9/11 that will confirm just about every assertion I made about Amanda Keller and her time with Mohammed Atta. And this guy, unlike me, has high intelligence connections. And when he met one night while he was here, spent here a month here, with that intelligence-connected individual, he was told that Amanda Keller never wavered in her story about living with Muhammad Atta. Never once wavered in her story about living with Muhammad Atta. Despite the subsequent, you know, as you probably know, attempts to question whether that occurred. Officially sponsored, basically, in the Sarasota Herald Tribune, in which Amanda Keller is alleged to have said, it was my bad. It was my bad to explain why she had claimed to live with, like, the most heinous terrorists. You know, it was like, you know, 4 days after World War II ending, someone saying, not that I'm drawing an analogy between Hitler and Atta, although I'm sure they have similarities.
I was going to say more than you might think. Go ahead.
Yeah. 4 days after World War II ending, you know, somebody claiming that she had lived with Adolf Hitler, and then a year later, after being persuaded to recant, you know, said, it was my bad to explain why she claimed to live with Hitler. For God's sake, what an amazing thing. What an amazing thing.
Yeah, well, the point is, Daniel, that there was an article on page A4, and again, by the way, that reference for people that are furiously trying to note that, it's Suspicion Hangs Over Hijacked Suspect's Ex-Roommate by Carol J. Williams, Los Angeles Times, November 15th, 2001, page A4, and Thorsten Berman notes, well, what about all these other Germans and Austrians who are hanging out there? You know, how come nobody is casting suspicion on them?
Well, there you go.
There's also
a September 23rd, 2001 New York Times article I'm just looking at now, and that also confirms that Thurston Berman flew with Girard.
Right.
But the source of that article doesn't apparently find it unusual that there were several dozen Germans among the Arabs there in Venice. So it was team coverage. It was a nation challenge. The plot, unpolished secret agents were able to hide in plain sight, which we know is not the truth. These guys, as I told you, I believe in one of our programs, one of the amazing things I discovered was unlike what we had heard in the news, which was that the FBI was at the flight school, Hoffman Aviation, where the terrorists allegedly learned to fly, in the middle of the night after the attack. In other words, 18 hours, 2:30 in the morning, 18 hours after the World Trade Center came down, that they were at Hoffman Aviation. They were in a white van outside an executive of Hoffman Aviation's recording his phone calls 4 hours after the attack. So that would be by early mid-afternoon. There was a van with FBI agents, a white van, outside the home of an executive of Hoffman Aviation, tape recording and monitoring his phone conversations. So if the FBI knew 4 hours after the attack who had done it, these guys were not able to hide in plain sight, okay? This nation's intelligence apparatus was well aware of who these people were. No, I don't know what that means, Dave. Okay, I keep my conspiracy theorizing, you know, to after I've had a few drinks. But it certainly means something, doesn't it?
Well, it means quite a bit, and I've certainly speculated about a lot of different things, and we've spoken at great length about the many different evidentiary paths that you've pursued in your investigations down there. You know, just very quickly, Daniel, you know, the program in which I annotated and actually excerpted on the air that particular article, For the Record 336, from November of 2001, the title was Walking the Snake, part three. It's a reference to a novel called Serpent's Walk, and that is published by National Vanguard Books, the same Nazi publisher that publishes the Turner Diaries, and it's about a Nazi takeover of the United States in the middle of the 21st century by the descendants of the SS who've infiltrated into the U.S. military, and it's a matter of public record. Not only did SS get brought into the intelligence system in this country, but also into the political system under the auspices of the Crusade for Freedom, which imported entire SS intelligence units. By the way, that an illegal operation was the godchild of Alan Dulles. The guy who oversaw it was Richard Nixon. The chief front person for that was Ronald Reagan, and the guy who oversaw the State Department machinations to bring him in was William Casey. But what Serpent's Walk is about is about after the United States is destroyed by a series of terrorist attacks using weapons of mass destruction, martial law is declared and the descendants of the SS take over the United States after gaining control of the media. Largest English language publisher now, Daniel, is Random House, owned by Bertelsmann, which was the publisher for the SS in World War II. But you know how the weapons of mass destruction come into the United States in this, quote, novel, unquote?
No, I don't.
Through the drug importation routes.
Well, how curious. And, right. So that is the central fact that I discovered down here. And I'm happy to be able to tell you that I'm not alone in having discovered this. Sybil Edmonds, who I don't know, I've never really spoken to except to say hi, mm-hmm. Through her translation of FBI documents, discovered that the State Department, after 9/11, was protecting an international drug trafficking network associated with the 9/11 attack. I believe those were her words. What I discovered in Venice, Florida, was that the owner of the flight school the owner of the flight school that Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi arrived to attend in July of 2000, had his Learjet confiscated that same month, July of 2000, by DEA agents with submachine guns, who found 43 pounds of heroin on board. Well, as apparently, you know, we all know, heroin comes from Afghanistan. Afghanistan is where Rudy Decker's in all of his interviews after the September 11th attack, Afghanistan is where Rudy Decker says Mohammed Atta came from. Curiously enough, although Atta apparently was traveling on some kind of a passport that we still don't know about, because Decker's, unlike the official story, which became otherwise, Decker said that Mohammed Atta came from Afghanistan. So there you go. I mean, that's the fact, Jack, okay? The flight school owner, I mean, nobody has investigated the people, the business associates in the U.S. of the goddamn terrorists, okay? There's this whole wacky movement that wants to investigate at what temperature steel melts, okay, which is curious. And I discovered a quote from a famous writer named Thomas Pynchon, who, if you're at all conspiratorially minded, you've probably read before, in which Pynchon says, if they can get you to ask the wrong questions, they don't have to worry about the answers,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which struck me pretty interesting. But the beat goes on.
Yeah, the beat does indeed go on.
With the same people. Okay, now, there's two new chapters in the paperback edition of Welcome to Terrorland, and both of them discuss where the heroin was going ultimately. It was being delivered to a representative of the Russian mob from Brighton Beach when the plane landed in Teterboro, New Jersey. Okay? The Russian mafia and 9/11. Who knew? And who knows whether that connection means anything. I mean, that's an international network that was operating,
mm-hmm.
And the terrorists were part of. But the co-pilot on the plane, a Guyanese national, South American country of Guyana, a national named Michael Francis Brassington, was the co-pilot on the plane busted with 43 pounds of heroin at the flight school, and his name never appeared in any DEA affidavit or in the trial, because which is curious. They never mentioned, I mean, you know, imagine a trial in which for people flying a plane full of dope that doesn't mention the name of the co-pilot of the plane, because he was apparently allegedly a DEA agent in that country, and that would, you know, he's still flying in under semi-official auspices, carrying everything, carrying contraband, let's just leave it at contraband, through Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport as part of a major U.S. customs scandal that has been covered up apparently successfully so far. That involves a drug sting operation gone wrong, in which massive amounts of cocaine have flowed into this country. Now, we're talking the two planes. I've been writing about two planes that left from St. Petersburg 18 months apart, got busted in the Yucatan. One had 5.5 tons of cocaine. One had 4 tons of cocaine. Their American owners are walking around paying for dinner just like any normal American today, and unruffled and unquestioned. And apparently there's even some question as to which law enforcement agency in the U.S. has responsibility for making sure that representatives of, say, an American drug cartel, should one ever be discovered, were selling planes to their fellows in Mexico, in the Sinaloa cartel, to their business associates. So it's a strange world, Dave. It's a strange world. And that's, well, and another, speaking of the Russian mob, that Michael Francis Brassington character that has corruption associations going back to 9/11, God knows how far beyond that, is currently a part of a major corruption scandal in his native country in Guyana, where the government of Guyana bought a couple of American helicopters for like three times what they were worth, and apparently in Guyana, like 50 cents a day is about what people live on. So apparently the populace down there was upset, and the minister in charge of the purchase said, well, we checked with a couple of experts, and one of them was Michael Francis Brassington, the guy that was flying dope for Wally Hilliard, the man that owned the flight school where Mohammed Atta showed up. The final Michael Francis Brassington connection that I find highly interesting is Michael Francis Brassington's father is called in print in Guyana the special advisor to the president of Guyana for privatization. Privatization is what occurred apparently in Russia when the Soviet Union collapsed. Privatization is what occurred, and it was an orgy of, I guess, dueling knives until the strongest emerged with the assets. But anyway, this Michael Francis Brassington's father, in his role of special advising Guyana on privatization, cut a $1 billion aluminum bauxite deal with Russia's biggest aluminum concern, run by the man who is the biggest, who is currently, because of his position as the head of the biggest Russian aluminum concern, the biggest Russian mobster in the whole damn world. A guy by the name of Oleg Deripaska. So the world of international organized crime, apparently, I mean, you know, organized crime has globalized the same way Ford and Dow Chemical have. And it represents something of a colossus that is able to keep what really happened from being reported in the papers every day.
Well, yeah, the tendrils that you've uncovered go in a lot of different directions. As Tony Blair said, as we've echoed so many times, Daniel, it's a global network. We're down to our last about 7-8 minutes here, Daniel. What I'd like to do, since we haven't spoken in some time, as you follow these evidentiary tributaries from the Venice flight schools on through the netherworld of all sorts of unsavory activities, you've come across a number of different connections, which you have talked about in some of your stories. First of all, it's a presidential election year, and the presumptive Republican nominee is John McCain, and he seems to suffer from terminal lobbyistosis, so to speak, and you have written about links between McCain and the lobbyists and one of the flights that got a whole lot of Saudi nationals out of the United States right after September 11th.
Yeah, curiously enough, that's the lobbying firm. Well, this is the woman. This took place, I guess, last summer when it was briefly a scandal whether McCain had an affair with an attractive female 35-year-old lobbyist who had made her company's plane available to McCain, okay? Mm-hmm. And why I became interested in the scandal was first of all, I wanted to see how a 71-year-old man did it, okay? Because, you know, I'm only in my mid-50s, and I want to live as long as I can. But more importantly, because the plane that the lobbyist was making available to McCain is owned by a Christian broadcasting network out of Tampa, Florida, and the plane had also been used 6 days after 9/11 in an evacuation of Saudi royal nationals out of Las Vegas. And I had traced the half a dozen planes that were identified that had flown Saudi royals and their connections out of the U.S. 6 days after 9/11. And all of those planes had connections to, well, one had connections to organized crime, American organized crime in Providence, Rhode Island. A couple had connections to the CIA, had been used later for rendition flights. And here we have a plane owned by a Christian broadcasting network that McCain is flying around in 2008.
Well, it's interesting, too. It says a lot about the focal point of the mass media, that they focused on whether or not McCain executed a soft landing, so to speak, with this attractive lobbyist, when in fact they should have been focusing on what happened to that plane that he's riding around in.
Well, sure, because that's follow the money, follow the, you know, I mean, and those are, that's what, those are incorporation documents. I mean, that's all, you know, it's very much like Barry Steele had a favorite King Air, military spec King Air, all tricked out. And that plane of his, after his assassination, somehow ended up just a few years later being the favorite plane of Texas Governor George W. Bush. And of course, it's all a coincidence, Dave.
No doubt.
But there it is.
Now, it's also a presidential election year, Daniel, and you've done a number of stories about some of the funky voting machine companies that have been skewing the results. Now, tell us,
I'm glad you brought that up. I am, because I hope there's, there are tons of viewers or listeners of your still out there, because what I want to do, I need help on. I need everybody's help on. I got to sell some books and some tapes here, because I need to do this in September, okay? And when I tell you what it's about, you'll know why, okay?
We've only got a couple of minutes, so try to do it as quickly as can, Dan.
Absolutely. Okay, 3 weeks ago, an American-registered airplane crashed in Venezuela, killing the pilot, who was a drug pilot, convicted in both Venezuela and the U.S., and his passengers, one of whom owned Smartmatic, a voting machine company that had purchased Sequoia, which counts 1 in 3 American votes. And so there was briefly a scandal in 2004 about this Venezuelan Hugo Chavez apparently connected company, which owned the voting machine company that was like counting votes in the U.S. election. And of course, you and I both know that Karl Rove would not have allowed anything like that to occur, okay? I mean, how naive to think that 1 in 3 American votes was going to be counted by a company owned by someone the U.S. was currently at odds with, okay? Now we have this drug pilot going down with the owner of that and that company, the guy that invented the software that is still used to count American votes, going down an American-registered plane, registered to a company in Houston that apparently is able to, I don't know, legally shield from view the ownership of the foreign ownership of American registered planes. So if a plane goes down with 10 tons of cocaine on it and it's an American plane and it's registered to Aircraft Guarantee in Houston, and Aircraft Guarantee has a trust agreement with the real owners of the plane, and you and I aren't allowed to know who those people are.
That is really Smartmatic, if you ask me.
So I want to do a documentary on what the hell was going on. I mean, because the implication is clear, okay? Here is a guy who was Hugo Chavez connected, okay? Mm-hmm. The government of Venezuela had been instrumental in getting that firm going, okay? So here's a guy, owns a company that owns an American election company, counting as many as 1 in 3 American votes. I guess their share went down in the last election, but say 1 in 5, okay, American votes. And he's connected to Chavez, and he goes down in a Houston-registered plane flown by a drug pilot a couple years later. Okay, now, this Houston...
Daniel, we are all out of time
here,
unfortunately. So, but people can read all about it at www.madcowprod.com. And at that same website, they can also place orders for Barry and the Boys, and also the new supplemented paperback edition of Welcome to Terror.
And pre-order the new documentary I'm trying to shoot in September called the New American Drug Lords.
Right, and the ownership of that Smartmatic company was something I talked about, by the way, and for the record, 576, called Votschwitz. It's very interesting because some of the tributaries run back to the direction of the old IG Farben cartel, the Bayer Company, headed up at one time by Carl Duisberg of the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, which trafficked around Mohammed Atta, invented, among other things, heroin. So it's a small world, and yet a big world, and a world that's been investigated at considerable length and will be at greater length by Daniel Hopsicker, my guest, for the last hour. However, we are all finished with Side 2 of For the Record program number 637, catching up with Daniel Hopsicker. This has been recorded on June 8th of 2008. My name is Dave Emery. For Daniel Hopsicker, thanks for listening.